We live in a fast-paced and hectic world where it's easy to feel overwhelmed, stressed, and out of control. How do you manage all the competing pressures without losing sense of yourself? How do you stay focused enough to not only plot a path, but follow it? Welcome to Master Your Life, a show that offers inspiration, insight, and intelligence, as well as success stories from many walks of life that can show you how you can control your own destiny. Our knowledgeable and entertaining host and her guests give practical advice that you can use every day in the quest to master your life. Now, here's your host, Leah Mattinson.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to today. Thank you to everyone for joining us wherever you are on this beautiful planet today. I'm joined this week by Dr. David Hardy. Dr. Dave, how are you this morning?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic, and happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday, yes, to everybody. And no matter what day of the week you're listening to this podcast, I want to encourage you to come over to the masteryourlife.ca website and check out the video version, or you can check us out on the YouTube channel. You can check out Dr. Dave's work at thehardybrain.ca. So make sure you get out your pen and paper, because we're going to be talking about some important things today about developmental milestones in children. And I know we've talked about this in other episodes, Dr. Hardy, but we really wanted to focus and dedicate this show just to this age group, because it's really becoming more and more glaringly apparent as we look out at the landscape of the struggles that people have with being successful in their adult life, that it very seriously links to what happened to them in their raising during the time of their birth to age four. So we're going to dedicate this episode today to that topic. So if you're a mom or a dad or a grandparent with children in this age group, or if you yourself are listening and go, I've been having some of these problems in my life, maybe it could link to not having a good successful milestone achievement during that age. What can I do about it? Because we can do things to change our experience in life to be more happy and more fulfilling if we know what it is that has tripped us up. So let's dive into this today, this very important topic. So Dr. Hardy, let's just start with, why is it important? What is important in this development? You know, people think, I'm going to have a baby. That's pretty easy. You know, it's a natural thing. How hard can it be? And then the baby arrives and you go, oh my Lord. This is a lot. And so it's a lot to parent. That's the most important job that we have. And why is it so important?
It's immensely important because basically the brain and nervous system are developing very rapidly in that period of time. And also the brain will reach this state where basically it's got more neurons, and the next job it has, and this is why toddlers start to learn so quickly, is what we call pruning. So you've got overabundance of connections. And then basically what happens is when they learn, they're just cutting away connections versus building connections. So it's quite this rapid period of learning. And this is kind of where the nervous system starts to really develop these connections that are going to set us up later in life. And it's just this massive growth period and period where that brain really starts to come online that we can't go back in time and get back.
Right. And so we've talked on other episodes and worldwide leaders and thought leaders and people who are research experts are acknowledging that these developmental milestones are changing.
Yes.
And not for the good. Not for the good. So it's just like, and it's not just the experts that are noticing this. My son-in-law said, I was talking with him about the importance of these milestones. They've got two and another one on the way. And nice. And I said, you know, yeah, there's like these milestones that were important when I was taking my training in psychology. That we learned, you know, Piaget, et cetera, and that we, you know, brought into our workplace. But these milestones have changed, and that, like, potty training has changed to be, instead of, you know, around 2 years of age, it's like three and afterwards.
Wow.
Yeah. And he said, uneducated in psychology, you know, he's got lots of experience as a dad. He goes, you know, you'd think we'd be getting smarter about these things, that we'd be getting better at them.
Right. That's the complete opposite. Yeah. Yeah. And you go into the psychology, and of course, everybody goes into Freud, and kind of Freud's theories got, of course, they're bizarre, right? So a lot of people don't really pay attention to them other than just to kind of make these jokes. But what he was actually explaining was basically different phases where different parts of the nervous system comes online. So he talks about this oral stage, and then eventually the genital stage, and all of this though is basically how the nervous system is developing. So if you look at nature and nurture, well, the nervous system's developing these kind of plexuses and areas of the spinal cord and nerves coming in, going up to the brain to feed those centers. Those are developing in these stages, and Freud explained them. And then what he kind of went off on was that then the nurture side becomes skewed during these periods of time if trauma or something happens. Well, that was back when it was sort of developing normally.
Right.
And yeah, trauma would definitely cause these areas to not function and work properly. And we're still seeing that. But what we're also seeing is we're seeing basically all these micro traumas, toxins, inflammation, and lack of stimulation that is causing these parts of the nervous system not to flourish. Mm-hmm. And then we're adding in, of course, more and more stuff and bombarding them nurture-wise differently. That's going to really skew how these systems work. And we just don't know the result of it until 10, 20 years later, or the parent is starting to report all sorts of things not happening properly with their child and noticing this and aren't getting any answers to it.
Mm-hmm. So what would be some examples of things that parents have shared with you over the years that you've been in practice that are kind of disturbing and you go, well, that's, and that they've noticed. So it's got to be pretty noticeable for those up close to notice, because often people who are closest don't notice.
Right. Like
they don't. They're doing. They're busy. They're tired. They're whatever. And they don't want to hear that something's wrong with their child either.
Oh,
right, there's something wrong. Well, nobody wants to hear that.
Like, oh God, that's got to be the worst news ever. Mm-hmm. But later in life, it's like, oh, that's just how so-and-so is. That's how little Johnny is. And it's like, well, something kind of caused that. So yeah. A lot of it's looking at basically motor-wise how the child develops. And well, let's backtrack. The first thing that happens are reflexes. Reflexes start to develop the child's nervous system. And we've got all sorts of different reflexes, like from the rooting reflex where you stroke the lips and the cheek, and then the baby suckles. Mm-hmm. So Freud's oral stage. That's kind of what's happening, what's developing. Mm-hmm. And then, well, we've got spinal reflexes. We've got eye reflexes. Basically, any receptor that has a sensation is going to have this sensory motor loop. And the first part is to get those sensations to start to happen. And then that will kick off a motor response. Mm-hmm. Well, motor response are also basically the same part of the brain where intellect develops too. So that whole thing is first going to start with just the baby being stimulated, being nurtured properly. And there's less of that. The biggest one's going to be touch. And we look at it, we put babies into clothes right off the bat. There's less skin-to-skin contact. And then we carry them around in the little baby carriages instead of holding them. So then there's a little less stimulation. And then you talked about toilet training and how that's being prolonged. Well, if you had to control basically how you go to the bathroom, you first need to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not feeling it. They're not getting that sensation because the diapers have become so good that the baby is now comfortable peeing. Mm-hmm. Well, the first lesson in toilet training is, or was in different time periods, don't pee on mom.
Right.
Like, yeah.
The reaction was, what?
And that automatically got the baby trained. Okay, it's a bad idea to pee on mom. I felt it coming and then I let it go. And oh my God, mom doesn't want me right now. And it trains the baby to learn when to hold it. Mm-hmm. And it's unpleasant because if we ever went back to that now, well, people would be peed on by babies and
all the time. Yes.
But, yeah. But it's kind of, well, do you want to get it out sooner and get the baby trained, or do you want it to go on for 3 or 4 years now? Mm-hmm. And then look at bedwetting later in life too. It's one of those things you have to kind of deal and put up with unpleasantries. And of course, that's one of them. Or just even cloth diapers, a baby's going to start to feel that unpleasantness of getting wet and start to learn, okay, well, I feel that. And well, can I control it? Can I hold it type mm-hmm. thing? And, yes.
And it's nuanced also, I think, Dr. Dave, mm-hmm. because the parent is also passing a milestone here.
Yes.
So the babies are passing milestones, and so are the parents. And the reason why that's so important is because people need to feel like they're competent. These are the first iterations of, oh, I'm competent as a parent.
Right.
It's yes. not just the baby. It's also the parent going, oh, I've got this. Okay. And like, whew, like I did it. And it's like high five. And I can tell you it's true because people, gosh, when my kids were little, so 26 years ago and so on, the girls would all sit around and we would talk about when the kids were potty trained and who actually did it. And then high five whoever it was that was successful at it, because it's not easy. Like, you actually have to focus on what you are doing. But once it's done, it's like everyone's doing a happy dance and the kids are doing a happy dance too. It's like, and they are, it's like, I peed on the potty. And everyone's like, woohoo, dude, it's like heaven. It's like some divine thing has happened. It's like, yes, because it has, because you don't actually need to be doing any of this changing of the little bumsies anymore.
Right. And
it is really important that from a number of perspectives, financially too. I mean, it just goes on and on and on, this diapering. It's like, it's really expensive. So it's really expensive financially. It's really expensive emotionally. It's expensive for the child who's not ready to go to, you know, grandma's house, because we kind of have a thing here where if you're not potty trained, you can't have a sleepover, because it's become so important that there's some sort of pressure somewhere in order for the potty training to happen. That if you don't exert some pressure, then people will just pee their pants forever. We're not supposed to do that. You know, we'd laugh and say, oh, well, they'll stop when, you know, they're ready to date. Like, that might be a little late.
Yeah, that's just not good.
That's right. We're not supposed to be back in a diaper until, you know, until we're 90 or so or whatever. But, you know, that
kind of goes into it. How we develop is how we're going to perform in kind of midlife, and then how we decline later in life. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people in adult diapers. And that's not good either. And mm-hmm. yeah, we're seeing all these trends just heading in the wrong direction. We're really getting weaker as a species in general.
Yes, yes, definitely. So let's go back to the babes, and also talk a little bit about when you're talking about cloth diapers. I think this is a great example also of how mm-hmm. something that was really good kind of, you know, took on a life of its own and now has become the extreme the other way, and the pendulum swinging back, you know, to kind of a comfortable place. So cloth diapers were really hard on moms and dads. And it was kind of sometimes a little bit hard on babies too, because if they got left in them or whatever, there was, you know, diaper right. rashes and all these kinds of things. They're a lot to clean up there, you know, so then the disposable diapers came in. That was like, oh, thank God. But now it's gone so far the other direction that people don't feel anything. And and then when the child gets a little older, they're argumentative too. It's like, well, I'm not going to go to the potty because you didn't catch it fast enough to get them to want to be cooperative in a way.
Wow. Oh, yeah. I could see that happening. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's like they're going, like, I know I need to pee. I can feel that I need to go to the washroom, but I'm not going to because I don't have to. Because I'm pretty comfortable and I'm going to play this little game with you, which is the, I don't have to actually go to the potty game. Yes. And so then it's the parents end up in an intellectual conversation, discussion, debate. With
a mind that's not intellectualized yet.
Yes. It's just kind of savage. The child is still uncivilized, and I don't mean savage in the, you know, bad way, but just they're going to do what they're going to do that's comfortable. So what would be like, what would have been the old milestones kind of from neurological development stage? Like, was two the old sort of age of potty training from your experience? Or
that's definitely what I've heard more of. And actually I've got a good poster on my wall in the clinic here with all the milestones on it.
Oh, great. Well, let's take a look at that and read through. So for those of you who are listening to this, make sure that you tune in to masteryourlife.ca so that you can watch the video version, or you can check it out on the YouTube channel.
Absolutely. Yeah. And these are the old milestones. They've actually been changed from what I've heard. And I don't feel like putting up new milestones that are just normalizing something that's not proper. Mm-hmm. And so 1 month, the baby should be able to lift its head, lie on the tummy, respond to sounds, stare at faces. And that's going to be kind of the first stages to developing into basically being able to then sit, crawl, stand, walk type things. And then you start to go into vocalizations and then recognizing faces and scents and visual tracking. And you kind of just move along, and then more emotionality starts to develop as well. More connection starts to develop.
So is that in month four?
Month four, we start to see smiles and laugh and can bear weight on legs and coos when you talk to them. And then we move along and geez, we're going fast. Like, this is only month five. And then we start to go into colors and plays with hands and feet. So we go from basically just head and kind of moving the trunk of the body now into things that are going to develop into being able to write and to grasp objects. And you can really start to see how this is going to turn into basically all the functions that we're able to do as an adult. And it's exciting. These are the small little stages of it.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Good. So if we were to break down basically any complex task into a lesson plan, or were to break down any skill, it's going to be broken down into small little steps along the way, right? And that could, the classic example is going to be sports, right? You start to practice little drills before you're able to play a game. So that's kind of the analogy for all the fathers out there who are looking at these milestones, right? The mothers are going to naturally have a better intuition about it. And
I don't know that they do.
Oh, okay.
I think that that's not true anymore, or we wouldn't be seeing these very disturbing trends. The moms are the ones who spend most time with them. And I'm a woman, so I feel, and raised a couple children, and we've got, right. I've got four grandchildren and another two on the way. So I feel like I have a fairly extensive understanding of child development, child psychology, because that's actually my education as well.
Right.
And so when I'm watching these things, I'm speaking because I am really disturbed as a grandmother, going, how do I set my grandchildren up to be successful and my children to be great parents? And so I don't know that people are that intuitive anymore. I think that they spend a lot of time on their devices.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't spend a lot of time actually with their children, and a lot of time numbing out. So if you think about all the things that have happened over the last couple of years, or even 3 years, you know, COVID babies, for example. So that's an actual thing where people are saying that the kids weren't properly socialized because they were at home. The problems in schools, because when that hit, one of my grandsons was in kindergarten, and that hit in March, and he didn't get any of the end of his year, March, April, May, June. So for 4 months, they didn't go to school.
Right.
And that's in kindergarten, grade one, kindergarten, I think. Yeah. And he went to kindergarten full time. And so all of the socialization stuff that was happening and would be normal, and the milestones, were instead subverted by this big, get the masks on, get people lined up, get them in order. Can you imagine being a child, actually what your brain would have had to take on and understand then?
Right.
Because we're seeing huge learning disabilities, huge. And the teachers will say, we can't teach these kids because we were so busy managing all of the bureaucratic stuff that was coming down that we couldn't even teach. And so there was that piece. So then, unless you're somebody who actually has the resources to be able to put your kids in alternate additional learning to help supplement all the things that they missed, your kids are in trouble. So we've got this, and the parents feel a tremendous amount of guilt and shame, you know.
Oh, and how are the parents going to learn this if they're isolated as well? And
Mom's groups,
that's
dad's
a
groups.
Mental health thing right there for the primary parent as well, not being able to get out and socialize as well and take some time away from the baby.
Yes.
It is absolutely devastating what's happened there when we look at the socialization of children, and especially at these very, very precious moments where that system's developing.
Yeah, and you don't get it back.
You don't.
You don't get it back. So it's like that's why I'm pressing on it so much, is because you really don't get it back. And if people understood that a little bit better, because it's, again, the snow job of, well, we can fix that later. We can fix that later. You can fix anything, can be fixed later. You can be anything, and you can fix anything later. No, you actually can't fix everything later. You can try to shore it up. You can try to fix, you can try, but the amount of unsuccess that parents and children are having at these really critical ages is impacting you for your whole life. So if you could actually push a reset button and just go back to, you know, that time in life, then, or if you're responsible for people who are there, like, what is it that you could do that with some sort of intelligent strategy that you would apply and go, okay, if I didn't just rely on my intuition, because all of my friends, their kids are also not going pee on the potty until they're three.
Yeah.
What society is telling me is
normalization of unnormal.
Right.
And
so
that's what we got going on, is that that there's so many people that fall into these categories of not developing properly that we think it's normal now. Mm-hmm. And, no, that's just taken away from the potential these kids have. And also basically
And that we have
how they're going to feel later in life.
Right.
And like, let's like we always say mental health, emotions. Mm-hmm. Well, what's the more common word for emotions? It's feeling.
Feeling.
And feelings start by actually feeling something. Mm-hmm. All these senses in the brain basically come in and stimulate it and develop it. If the baby doesn't develop these sensations, they're not going to have proper feelings later in life. And you get into the body dysmorphia, as you get into the anxieties, all of these are stemming from, once again, systems that aren't developing properly. And these aren't even the kids that we'll give a big, heavy diagnosis to. And we can go back later and do treatment. But basically out there, there's limited clinicians that have the skills or knowledge to do that. Mm-hmm. And then there's not the resources to get everybody in the population to go through these.
And it's not free.
And it's not.
Even if you can access a clinician and you could do whatever, mm-hmm. it's like, it's expensive to remediate these problems.
Oh yeah. And guess what? The government's not paying for it.
Surprise.
Right?
there's a surprise.
Stuck in this old system where, you'll go see the school counselor, or it's up to the teacher and the parents to help you out. And, maybe later on you'll be medicated. But, they have no ability right now to change the system to help these children out. And we're leaving a lot of basically healthcare knowledge and rehabilitation up to a school system. And I've been in both. And when I was teaching middle school behavioral students, and we were doing phys ed 2 or 3 times per day just to keep the kids active. And we were going on the research that movement is going to help these kids out. And it did. But I was not a clinician. And to get even more specific on what movements and what therapies and what games weren't as precise. And it helps, definitely. But also in some kids, it was maybe too much or too little. So you just don't know. And you're going off of generalized themes here in a very unique brain that has missed different developments and then had different, basically, nurture or whatever we want to call it, raising of the child that are different and impacting that system as well. And it's really turning into a crisis.
It's bloody hard to be a parent. It's like the mm-hmm. hardest job in the world. It really is. It's the hardest job in the world already. And then you heap on this misinformation about that your children are capable and that you should be sitting in front of your Facebook feed all day long. And that's okay because that's the norm. I'm so surprised by things, I guess, still like that come out across my social media feeds, like people celebrating sober pregnancy. And I'm like, when did that become an actual thing? Like we did our pregnancy together sober. And I don't mean a husband and wife couple. I mean, two women who are pregnant. And I'm like, what? When did that become odd?
Right. Yeah.
When did that become an odd thing that
you would actually post it? From two people who've been in the school system, yourself and myself, yes. one of the worst conditions I've ever seen, basically, when it comes to children is fetal alcohol syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And these kids have it rough. Mm-hmm. And then too, later in life, when we talk about that performance time, is they're very more statistically prone to go into crime. And we see that all the time. And it's a horrible, horrible thing that alcohol, different toxins are going to affect that developing brain. And oh geez, if there's just one prevention thing, that would be it. But there is not just one, but that's a severe one that we still haven't teased out of or gotten away in society. And And right. part of it is because when fetal alcohol affects the fetus the most is when a woman's not aware she's pregnant. And that becomes the tough part of it as well. There's just so many sad things we can go in with this. But for the people listening, I think it's very important that we really go into the things that they're doing right and can continue to do right. And a lot of that's that caring, nurturing, and holding your baby and caressing it and loving that child.
And loving that child. But because I am going to press on this, because I'm a grandma that's I'm just going to reiterate this. So this affects me in my real life.
Yes.
Because I babysit children. I babysit a lot of children a lot of the time. And and I did work in the school system. I did work in vulnerable populations where kids definitely had FAS, amongst other things. But if you're a woman or a man who is who is sexually active, like try to think about that a little bit, the drinking and this being sexually active without any precautions. About what the consequence can be to that child if you produce a child. Because it does matter. It does matter to your life too, because they're difficult children to raise. You know, I taught sex ed. So in 1991, I was teaching sex ed because the public health nurses weren't doing it anymore. And so I was teaching it to grade 10 students in career and life management. And I could just remember that very poignantly saying to them, like 5 minutes in the backseat of your car, you know, is something that you can never get back.
Right.
If you have a mistake, quote unquote, a mistake, but we're not just seeing this in the teenage population. I mean, not at all. So not to vilify teenagers, adults are making these kind of decisions all the time. But what I wonder is if people just haven't actually been taught or don't know that the impact of alcohol actually happens before you know you're pregnant. So what is the window of time when you're drinking from research, from the stats that you should not get pregnant? Like what's the timeline? The first 2 weeks of your pregnancy,
that's basically it. Yeah.
From the moment of the conception.
And I think we're dealing with a huger topic than just the education on what alcohol can do. Mm-hmm. And I think there is an awareness to some extent out there. I think the biggest thing though is we're dealing with a lot of awkward people, awkward relationships. And well, what makes things less awkward for people is they drink. And then they're able to have that pleasure and that experience that is absolutely amazing, right? But we've got this awkward population and these awkward relationships. And yeah, sitting down and listening to basically the school counselor or a parent or a teacher, someone who's older, they're not going to be training people on how to actually have these dynamic relationships from basically meeting, locking eyes, and all the way through, and help these awkward people and awkward relationships out better. No, we're going to bombard them with facts and intellectual information. And then, well, how do they learn? They learn from their peers and from the internet and
feeling
porn, and they don't understand how to have a smooth, fluid relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be right there in these hard times where they're not going to listen to any authority figures anyways. Mm-hmm. So I really think kind of that relationship dynamic is missing in things when we start to discuss teenage mental health. And this even goes into basically films and everything that's going to kind of help nurture how people mirror relationships at these ages. Mm-hmm. And I think that could be kind of the focus if we wanted to make an impact and difference with these. And then two, going back to where the brain hasn't developed properly, kind of sensationalize, there's going to be huge drives and urges. There is anyway.
Yes.
And yeah, there's going to be this hypersexualization in the body because it's not regulated properly. Mm-hmm. And yeah, one of the disturbing things I first heard when I was teaching autistic spectrum or Asperger's is that, yeah, you're going to see them play with themselves a lot more.
Right.
And mm-hmm. they're trying to self-stimulate, and they're doing it constantly. They don't have this aware social awareness either, but they have all these drives and urges. Well, let's back up that spectrum a little bit more. A spectrum disorder is basically just the cutoff of a certain diagnosis criteria. And then there's people that are close to the spectrum, kind of brain function wise, nervous system wise, that aren't diagnosed. And yeah, these are going to be your normal kids who are awkward and don't function properly anyways, don't pick up on social cues and relationships, feelings, emotions. And then they've boom, got this hypersexuality that comes with being a teenager and everything else. And what are they going to do when they actually have to talk to somebody of the opposite sex now? I'm 18, I'm awkward, I'm going to grab that beer at that party so I can get it through. Mm-hmm. And there's such this huge, huge interlinked web between, once again, the development of the nervous system and all these social pressures and education, intellectual, and then just society as well. And the media, and I say that in kind of more in a fun way of like movies and shows and even TikTok and everything else, is that all of that's bombarding this system all at once. And if we don't catch it earlier and help the nervous system, the hardware come online properly, and then we add all these abnormal skews to relationship dynamics later, it's mm-hmm. it really is just the perfect shitstorm.
Yes, it yeah. really is. It's completely it's insane.
Mm-hmm.
It's the opposite yeah. of sanity, where you just go, that's it's insane.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltzer know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltzer, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltzer. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
And so when you're in the throes of stuff like that, like when you say TikTok, some part of me wants to vomit. Because actually TikTok they tried to get that banned in the US. Somebody petitioned to have it banned and it wasn't banned, but because it's actually... the story behind that is that it was intentionally created to make North Americans stupider.
Right.
So look up the research on that, folks. That's your little homework for, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole because I don't want to get banned again. I've taken enough banning. No more banning for me. So,
And I don't think we can just blame it all on TikTok. There's a tons of other stuff that's making everybody stupider.
Making everybody stupider. Exactly. But this is your, it's like, if you're listening to this show, you absolutely don't want to be, you're trying to find your way back to home base. It's like, so that you can actually master your life or recover whatever's going on. And so this is a very select segment of people that actually tune into our show, I think, and people who are striving to make their lives better, make their families' lives better, make their mental health better. And so really these foundational things, fundamental at birth and before that, so yes, in utero, I didn't even think about that this morning as I was writing out what we were going to talk about today.
Right. Oh, we can even dive farther. There's in utero and of course, making sure we've got proper B vitamins and decreased stress and not taking in toxins. All of that is just a huge, huge topic right there. But we're also seeing it on the man's side as well now that the quality and quantity of sperm is deteriorating. Yes. And so that is a whole other window into how things are getting worse in this area that we also need to focus on the male reproductive side as well, because it's not looking good either.
Right.
And it's probably declining faster than what's happening in women. So
yeah, I know that the alcohol use in women is higher than in men right now.
Right now, I could see that. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot more social pressures going on. And then when we reach that threshold of overwhelm, we're looking for something to calm us down. And that's kind of the next frontier as well. Well, can we do that without going to the liquor or the medicine cabinet to do that? There is. And then also society wise, we got to look at decreasing the amount of insanity out there, but I don't see that happening anytime soon.
No, it's like you have to become your own wellness is within you, and wellness is within your family, and start at home.
Exactly. That's the biggest take home right now in anything going on in healthcare is how much more responsibility you need to take for your own health. Mm-hmm. And others are there to guide you, but ultimately it's your job to stay healthy and to find the right resources to be able to set up the right plan for yourself. And one exercise program for one person or one diet program for one person is not going to be the one for the next person. Everybody's so unique and different. So, so much of it is finding out how to actually kind of figure out your own body and your own physiology and your own neurology so that you can do these things.
Yeah. And I'm struck by, as you say, that the importance of having a baby book when we're talking about these, you know, the age of birth to 4 or 5 years old, 4 years old. If you keep a baby book or you have a baby book kept for you, you can look back at those milestones and see where you were and and that sort of then see what the norms were. But you can see the achievements that your child had as well. You know, yes. So it's part of this way of accountability that really you can use that as your tracker and tool, the baby book, to go and not to have it online, like everything online. You know, go buy a baby book, go get your friends a baby book. We just recently had a couple of baby showers because we've got everyone around me except me. Thank God, it's pregnant. That is not happening. Way beyond that. But I say that a little bit tongue in cheek because I'm probably in better shape than a lot of people. But I do remember being young, because I was 30-ish when I was finished having my children, and that it was just, it's a lot of work. It's exhausting. Writing down the milestones of things is really important because you can look back and go, okay, well, what are we achieving and what's on target and what isn't? But if you're looking at a target that's out to lunch like this, and I just keep going back to the potty training example because it kind of hits all the sore spots, right? It's
it really does. Yeah. And what's worse than a child that's still peeing is a child that's peeing and screaming.
Oh, yes. Peeing and screaming, that combo. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. If they haven't developed basically control of their own body and being able to pee, as an example, how well do you think their nervous system's actually registering how well they feel? And they're going to be more irritable. They're going to scream more. And yeah, I was just talking to one patient who came in who's a nurse as well. And she started talking about how she got adjusted right when she came into the world as a baby. And I'm like, it makes perfect sense. Like the adjustments are so gentle. It's like a pinky contact. But like, how traumatic is the birthing experience for both mother and child? And there's going to be physical trauma done to both. Now, a baby is going to cry basically for a reason. Something is irritating them. So then it becomes, okay, well, what's irritating them? Yeah, is there actually something that's kind of being twisted and pulled and pushed and put in awkward positions? The answer is absolutely yes.
Right.
And no, they'll grow out of it. It's like, no, look at what's actually causing a baby to scream.
And it's not the dog
irritating them. And then look at what's causing a toddler to be irritated and grumpy. There's definitely reasons and patterns behind all of this. And if you want a better life as a parent, you need to look into these things. That there's probably a reason why a child, baby, toddler, infant is irritable, acting up, screaming, having tantrums. Something isn't right in how they feel or how their body.
Their physiology, right? Their physiology. Exactly. There's a real thing, like scratchy clothes, or you know, something that's out of alignment, or
Like, why do all these children have touch sensitivities later in life? They can't handle their skin; it's itchy. Well, could it be toxins and build up there? Possibly. Could it also be that there wasn't enough touch to develop those sensations earlier? Possibly. Or could it be a combination? Could it be something else? And yeah, we need to look into this so we can actually solve these problems so everyone's happier, and parents especially, because as you mentioned, it's not easy. And if you have a screaming child, well...
And then you add two.
Easy for anyone even around.
Yeah, that's right. Nobody wants to be around. The parents don't want to be around. The kids don't want, you know, the grandparents are going, somebody please, you know, figure out these screaming memes. Was somebody said that along my life. I went, oh, that's funny. But it's not funny for if you're living in it.
It's not. Right? No, it's got to be sheer torture.
How can people be helped through functional neurology with this?
Right. A lot of it's looking first at primitive reflexes. So all these little sensations that develop this uncontrolled motor output. So if they're still persistent, then the nervous system didn't develop enough around it to inhibit it and make it go away. So these primitive reflexes should disappear. Or the other part is maybe they never really had them to begin with, and we need to keep stimulating that so it kicks in and then disappears. So yeah, kind of the first part's those primitive reflexes, and then looking at muscle control and sensation input and processing and all of these pathways, and then coming up with a plan to actually stimulate these parts of the brain nervous system, starting all at that little receptor that gives these sensations, and get the system working better. But one of the keys though is you have to do it at a frequency, intensity, duration to make a change. So if you do it for too long, you're going to overstimulate and make things worse. And then if you don't do it enough times per day, you're never going to make a change to it. And if it's not intense enough, once again, you might not make a change to the system. Or if it's too intense, then once again, you overstimulate and make things worse. So there does become that observation, that skill. And that can also be trained and coached into basically how the parents are going to take some of these exercises and do them on their own too. But it's that matter of figuring out what's going wrong. And then, yeah, how do you observe it? So when you are doing these, that yeah, you're making the proper change. And that's the difference between a cookie cutter approach and actually doing it right and proper.
Right.
Yeah. And that's why there's so many limited skilled practitioners that will work with these populations and be able to make these changes. Is yeah, you do have to develop the observation skills on top of just knowledge, and then adjust as things develop and change. So
yeah, I love it. So this is a role for a practitioner, also for a savvy aware parent or grandparent, just noticing that things aren't up to snuff, up to scratch, as we like to say. If it's not up to scratch, then why wouldn't you do something about it? And then there's kind of been this, and we're out of time for today, but I want people to take away from this the hope that things can be better in their life or for their children or grandchildren, but it can only be better if you acknowledge that something isn't quite right. And so this not dismissing things, it's really important. And then finding people who support you in your striving and your standards to actually say, no, you're not out in left field. You're right. This should be the standard. So what is it that we need to do to help get things back up to standards? Because that's, you know, like the putting your own house in order thing is like important. So it's like, how do you put your own house in order and how do you help your family to put their house in order is by keeping your standards high. And that is a Western tradition. Keep your standards high and have your culture, your group that you're hanging out with, encourage you to do the same and help. So I hope that this has given encouragement to young parents. And God knows we've all been there and we've all made mistakes in parenting, but we need to band together and help each other to help our kids to be successful in their childhood so that they can have a quality of life that's awesome. And so that we as parents and grandparents can actually breathe a sigh of relief and look at our family with pride and go, I'm really proud of what our family has achieved here and things that we've overcome and the milestones that we've passed. They are incredibly important. So Dave, thank you so much for your wisdom and sharing it. And I would ask if we could get from you that the chart, I'll send it out on the show notes so that people can actually come to the website, masteryourlife.ca, and you can look at the show notes and the link to that chart will be there so that you can actually track along with what is considered normal milestones by our Western standards. So,
right.
Yeah. All right. Awesome. Thank you, Dr. Hardy. I hope you, everyone, love yourselves, love each other, mind your minds. That's all for us. Bye for today.
Thank you for being a part of our program today. Master Your Life is a presentation of Leah Mattinson Enterprises, Inc. Join us next time on Master Your Life, helping you to discover the very best of you.